This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. It's time for Issues and Ideas, a show that features a wide variety of local voices sharing their thoughts and perspectives. Coming up, Al Stewart is appearing at the Cuesta CPAC this coming weekend, and he spoke with KCBX's Sal Espana.
Year of the Cat had at least four different sets of lyrics. Originally, it was called Foot of the Stage.
Also, on Peace, Love, and Pets, you'll hear about some of the many local nonprofits working to help animals, including Pacific Wildlife Care.
Our vet is incredible and takes on additional species that many of the other centers can't take on.
These stories and more coming up on Issues and Ideas. Good afternoon. It's Monday, April 15th, 2024. I'm Carol Tangeman. Let's start with agenda breakdown.
Welcome to Agenda Breakdown, a podcast that explores how cities and counties make decisions and how you can have a say. I'm Kim Bischoff, and today we've got a special episode about the launch of Digital Democracy, an AI-powered tool that gives California residents unprecedented access to information about our state government. Digital Democracy is the result of a collaboration between Cal Poly and CalMatters that's been in the works for about 10 years. The website became available to the public on April 8th, and I had the privilege of moderating a panel discussion with three of the individuals who helped create it. We talked about the need for legislative transparency that inspired the project and how challenging it was to gather the public records and develop the software that makes it work. And we talked about how Digital Democracy aims to give every Californian access to information about what our lawmakers in Sacramento are doing to address the issues that matter to us. And so here is that conversation.
Thanks, everybody, for being here. I'm very excited that we're here today to launch this project that's been underway for a very long time. And I'll start by introducing the panelists. We've got Dave Lesher, who is the founder of CalMatters and the director of Digital Democracy. Christine Robertson, the founding associate director of the Institute for Advanced Technology and Public Policy, former legislative staffer, and executive director of the San Luis Coastal Education Foundation. And we've got Fouad Kasmoud, the Forbes Professor of Computer Engineering and primary investigator on the Digital Democracy Project. So thanks to all of you for being here today for this conversation. And Christine, I wanted to start with you. I know you've been involved since the very beginning. Can you share with us the birth of the idea?
Yeah. So I think it's important to level set, because for those of you who are not familiar with the legislature, what you may not have understood walking into this room is that the California State Legislature, despite being the fifth largest economy in the world, if that's our current ranking, produces no records of what was said in any hearing. And so as a legislative staffer, as a chief of staff working in both the Assembly and the Senate, my reality was there were 5,000 hours of hearings every year. There were about 10,000 people who came through that Capitol building each session to provide testimony, to serve as witnesses, to be experts, to influence the process. And there was no record of any of it. Lawmakers were not holding each other accountable to representations that were being made through the process. And so the special interests were exercising undue influence because lawmakers could not hold each other accountable because there was no record to go back to and reconstruct. At the same time, we were sort of palpably noticing the decline of statehouse reporting. There were fewer and fewer reporters in the room every single month. And at the same time, we had all these community-based organizations and nonprofits. One in particular, Family Care Network here in town, serves foster youth and families that are experiencing trauma. And they depend heavily on policies and budget funding that comes to the state. And they would be calling us saying, hey, can you tell us what happened in this committee? And I would say, no, I wasn't there. I can't tell you, I can't help you advocate for your issues. And so as representatives for the community, we felt really poorly equipped to come alongside and help our community-based organizations advocate for their issues in the legislature. So those three factors were just top of mind for us. And we went to the leadership of the legislature and said, this is a problem. We need a record. Can you create a record? And they said, oh, it would be cost prohibitive. It would be technologically infeasible. We don't know how to do it. which basically meant we have zero political will to solve this problem. And so when my boss decided not to seek re-election, we started talking about, like, what is the next frontier of civic, you know, impact and service in the, you know, name of democracy? What do we do? And we identified this problem as the mission for our team. And we all almost exported, you know, half of our legislative office here to Cal Poly. We came here and we set up the Institute for Advanced Technology and Public Policy and said, this is the problem we want to attack. As Providence would have it, we just were fortunate enough to stumble into the office of Fawad and Alex and said, we have a crazy idea. We need to create a record out of almost nothing. We've got some video feeds that are kind of a mess. Can you, like, hack the system and just, like, figure out how to create a verbatim record? And that started us on this journey. But I think it's important to really give props to Cal Poly, because Cal Poly met the moment. Cal Poly had the not just technical expertise, but the will to say, we're going to invent something that doesn't exist. None of this is possible without Cal Poly building the innovation that creates the record that never existed. And I'll tell you another dirty little secret. California is not unique. This is a nationwide problem in state legislatures. Cal Poly is on the leading edge. And, you know, as a former staffer, I will tell you, this was the tool that would have made me think differently about how we did our job, knowing that at any moment, anyone could go back and look at what we were up to. And as Dave mentioned, you know, the amazing thing about this moment sitting here, and I have this incredibly vivid memory, as, you know, earliest days, as Dave mentioned, he's, you know, was building CalMatters. We were building digital democracy, and Dave and I were walking downtown Sacramento. And I said, boy, the dream is to bring these two things together. The full potential of this tool will never be realized until it is put in the hands of high quality journalists. And CalMatters, I will tell you, is the only partner with whom we would have felt comfortable, you know, kind of rehoming this tool, because CalMatters has the mission, they have the team, they have the integrity, they have the independence, and we've watched them build CalMatters. And we, I think, are creating something that could be truly transformational for democracy. That was a very long answer.
Thank you. And you teed me up beautifully, because I'd love to ask Dave, can you tell me what that transition point looked like from the CalMatters perspective?
So, you know, I think, and then we brought in 10 up too. So to me, the idea that we are taking this wealth of data that it really looks inside the Capitol in an empirical way to see why things happen and how they happen. And you can have confidence and trust in the integrity of this information because of where it comes from. So it is essential to the storytelling that CalMatters is trying to do. Our mission at CalMatters is really to help people understand what are the issues, how is the process working, why do the decisions come out the way they do because of the process that leads to it, what are the politics, who are the influencers, and then what does it mean to you? And so to do that, to be able to see into the process with this data and to be able to do it quickly and in a real-time kind of environment, it takes what we've been doing at CalMatters. We've really, it's a whole different level. And, you know, I mean, Dean Baquet is on our board of directors. He's the former New York Times editor, and he just joined our board when he retired. His quote in our press release is about how it's going to transform journalism and covering state legislatures, not just in California, but across the country. It allows a reporter to basically be in every single public hearing. There is a reporter there. And, you know, it allows a process that is really, in a basic way, opaque right now. It is, even if you know what you're doing, it is hard to find out what happened, when, and how. It's like all the data that's in this database is public, but it would take an enormous amount of time. And then to kind of connect the dots, and now we have AI that does that. It's just transformative. So it is central to the mission of CalMatters. It is a huge leap in what we can do in terms of our mission of telling people in California who these legislators are and why things are happening the way they are.
Absolutely. Speaking of the AI, Fawad Fifteen described this moment where she and Sam Blakesley approached you and asked you to tackle this beast. Did you say yes before you really understood the scope of it?
Yes. Absolutely.
So what were some of the biggest technical challenges?
So let me be completely honest. At first, I thought there was a record and all I had to do was get it and put it on a website. And I was like, this is easy. And then it really hit me when, you know, she told me there was no record and it didn't really register because I thought C-SPAN has one. And like, you know, I've seen like the House of Commons and stuff like that. And yeah, none of that was there. So it became a much harder problem real fast. But I would say just as difficult, and I think my colleague, Dr. Dekjar, could also attest to this, getting the actual record was one thing, but actually putting it together in like a common database that for the first time was, you know, acting like an interlocutor between all these different government databases. There were some of them were really arcane and you know, there were difficulty like trying to figure out if the same Bob Smith here is the same Bob Smith there and so on, because we had no access to Social Security numbers or anything like that. That ended up being a huge challenge, almost as much as just bringing the data.
I wanted to ask you about artificial intelligence too. I know you've been working on this for about a decade now, and the technology has changed quite a bit since you started. Has that affected your work that you do?
Sure. I would say the biggest effect is people asking me, is there ChatGPT in this?
Mm, yeah.
And the answer is no, because there's a lot of issues still with that kind of AI. Now, you know, a pet peeve of mine is that AI has actually existed since the 50s. And so what we now call AI is a very specific kind of a device that is, you know, speculative, large language models, token prediction, that kind of a thing. Has its uses, it is maturing. We probably will integrate it more heavily in the future. But I'm proud to say that none of this is ChatGPT. No, we go to great length to make sure every word is 100% correct. And that's great cost to both us and CalMatters to make sure that happens. So everything is sourced directly to the primary source. And there is no mystery about how it was created or where it came from and what the formula was behind calculating it.
You're listening to Agenda Breakdown. I'm Kim Bischoff, and today I'm sharing a recorded conversation with Dave Lesher, Christine Robertson, and Fawad Kosmoun, three of the creators of Digital Democracy.
Dave, this morning, CalMatters published a story about how California Democrats never vote no. Can you explain how your team of digital democracy reporters that you have on staff right now went about using the tool in order to report that story and how they will use the tool going forward?
We actually stumbled onto it. We were doing a story about a different bill about extending the ability for pretrial hearings to be done on Zoom that was very controversial. So we were looking at that bill and we were looking at the video and the transcript, and we noticed that the legislators were in the room during the hearing, but when it came time to vote, they didn't vote. And they had spoken nicely about the bill when they were talking. And so it sounded like it was going to pass, and then it failed because they didn't vote. And so following the legislature, I have seen people not vote before, you know, when they were in the room, but I had no idea how pervasive it was. So we thought, you know, let's just look at that. And this is what made it so easy. The data, Thomas helped and Fawad and our reporter, Ryan Savlo, wrote the story with Julie Watts, our CBS collaborator. But we just ran the numbers. All the votes are in there. We looked at 1 million votes of the people, the 120 legislators who are currently in the legislature, looking at 1 million votes that they've cast. And, you know, the Democratic legislators are less than 1% voting no. For Republicans, you can understand it's a supermajority Democratic legislature. But still, their voting no rate was only 21%, which is a lot more, but it's still more than three quarters of their votes are either yes or not voting. So it didn't take long to look into why is this happening. And there's a couple different reasons. And you know, the other thing is when we called a couple dozen legislators and leadership to help answer this question, why is that we seeing this pattern? They just couldn't talk. It's not something that they want to talk about.
That's interesting. It opens them up to a whole new set of questions.
Yeah.
How do you see local news reporters using digital democracy?
Well, you know, local newsrooms are really stressed right now. You know, reporters have to do a lot of stories. They don't have a lot of time. And this is an opportunity. You know, they do want to cover how they're being represented in Sacramento. You know, what is the local legislator doing? And the idea that a reporter will be able to register with CalMatters, with Digital Democracy, and to be able to, you know, sign up for a filter that will send them the tip sheets for story ideas that's just about their legislator or, you know, by a topic. I think in a lot of cases, when the tip sheets are up and running, you can turn around a story in an hour or maybe a little bit more. I mean, the bulk of the story is there. And so it just makes it, in today's media environment, much more feasible for local reporters to cover their state legislator.
Can I add on to that?
Yeah, please do.
So, you know, Dave knows this is an area where I have particular passion, is how do we equip and empower hometown media to cover their local legislator? Whenever we got coverage, you know, in the LA Times, the Sacramento Bee, I would say that was a more of a vanity exercise than an accountability exercise. Mm-hmm. Because that coverage was, you know, great visibility for lobbyists or other people who might be relevant for that next step if you're going to run for statewide office or run for some other position. But your hometown readers are the ones who vote for you. And they may not be reading the LA Times or the Sacramento Bee. But when a story popped in the Tribune, well, San Luis Obispo Tribune, it made us sit up straight. The problem was when, you know, state house reporting was declining, so too was local reporting. They have fewer and fewer reporters to tell high quality stories. And so what we were finding as staff was a lot of the stories that were being told about what we were up to in Sacramento were coming from us. We were feeding press releases. We were pitching stories. We were shaping the narrative. The power dynamic was backward. And from an accountability perspective, we as staff were very aware that we had too much influence in that process. And so the idea here is by using these technology tools to tell stories out to hometown papers, to give them tips, to give them resources, to allow them to do more reporting with fewer people, until we can figure out the media model, the business model, that's where you get huge accountability.
I know we're getting light on time, so I'm going to ask one more question. This is mostly the public-facing site. And as a member of the public who's gone in and dabbled, it is a rabbit hole. There is so much to engage with. What's your recommendation for a starting point for people who are going to the Digital Democracy site for the first time and wanting to know what's happening with their representatives at the state level and seeing all of this wonderful information that's available to them?
You know, the kind of two entry points that came to our mind was a legislator. If you want to look at your legislator, you can see all that information about them. You can see the stories written about them. That's one entry point. The other is from the homepage. We have the California Agenda for 2024. And the idea was, if you want to know what's happening on education or environment or healthcare, you go to that page and our beat reporters, our reporter who covers education or healthcare or environment, writes a short summary of what's happening this year in Sacramento on that issue. And then there's a fact box. And then there is all the highlighted bills that are being considered this year on that topic. And our reporters actually went through all the bills that are being considered and picked out what they understand to be the most prominent bills. And then you can see the key players, both key legislators who are active on that topic, and then all the non-legislator key players. And then CalMatters does a lot of explainers that we also have on that page. So those are entry point kind of gateways. And then, you know, our homepage is also just kind of a glance at the legislature. You can see, look at it, you know, by gender, by ethnicity, by age. And then one of the fun things is the top 10 list. The top 10 people who were absent, the top 10 people who take money from oil, the top 10 people who won by the most margin, you know, a variety of different uses of the data, and it shows the top 10 and the bottom 10. So, you know, it is something that I think you can learn a lot about your legislature. And then obviously the search bar is just so powerful. Anything you can think of, you know, Newsom or Trump or democracy or environment, you type it in there and it'll give you every comment that's made about that and every person and bill that's related to that. So it's incredibly powerful.
Thank you. I really enjoy those top 10 lists. I like the most talkative. One of my own representatives, John Laird, was number one. So thank you for that. And anybody who wants to start dabbling at home, it's digitaldemocracy.calmatters.org.
Thanks, everybody online who participated. Really appreciate you being here.
Now it's time for today's action item. Get to know digital democracy. You can start by opening up your web browser and going to digitaldemocracy.calmatters.org. After that, look up your local representatives or click on one of the California Agenda icons to start exploring an issue that matters to you. I'd love to know how you're using this new tool, so if you find something you'd like to share, please reach out on Instagram at Agenda Breakdown and let me know. Today's episode was produced by Jordan Treble with music by Wes Bischoff. If you like the show, you can go to agendabreakdown.com to listen to past episodes and follow us on social media. You can also find us and subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kim Bischoff. Thanks for listening to Agenda Breakdown.
You're listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Carol Tangeman. Al Stewart will be appearing with his band Empty Pockets this Saturday, April 20th at the Cuesta CPAC. He speaks with KCBX's Sal Espana in this interview from our archives. KCBX intern Jacqueline Martin edited and remixed the interview.
You are listening to KCBX, and we are speaking with the one and the only Mr. Al Stewart. Thank you for talking with us, Al.
You are welcome.
And today we are recording this on your birthday. We'd like to wish you a happy birthday.
Well, thank you very much.
Are you doing anything to celebrate your birthday? Anything special today?
I don't know. I mean, it's...
Will there be wine involved?
Oh, there's always wine involved. I mean, if you come to these parts, then there is wine involved, yeah.
Are you still a wine connoisseur?
I don't know if that's the right word for it. I mean, I have quite a lot of wine, most of which I bought a long time ago. I don't know. I mean, I don't have the enthusiasm that I used to have. I mean, I used to be encyclopedic in red Bordeaux. There was no vintage of any chateau that I hadn't either had or knew about going back to the 19th century. The oldest wine I had was 200 years old. It was 1811 Akim. And I've gone back as far as I possibly can. At this point, there's probably nothing I haven't had. I mean, it's scary, really. So the last thing I want to be doing is traipsing around a vineyard, because I've spent half my life doing exactly that. I built up far too big a collection, really. I don't know if I'll get through it in my lifetime, but I'm trying.
You're trying. If you need any help, call me. But I'd like to, of course, talk about your songwriting. You've referred to your songs as oral cinema. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think they're basically like miniature movies. You know, they have plot and character development, hopefully. And I think of them as just like watching a précis of a movie, a trailer, if you like. You know? They're kind of like that. And no matter what they are, Roads to Moscow, Year of the Cat, and any of these things, they're basically like watching a small movie, I think.
In addition to the lyrics that help paint the picture, also certain instruments you throw in to kind of add color and flavor, like the Spanish guitar and On the Border, and I'm also fond of the sonar blips in Life in Dark Water. You kind of create this whole mise-en-scene, which I think back in the day used to be called art rock, didn't it?
I don't know. I've never called it that. I mean, basically the elements that I use, history obviously is a big one. Literature, biography, cinema, and music. And basically what I do is I just put them all in a pot and stir. And none of these elements are any more important than the others. They're all part of it. Geography, too, actually, is quite a big theme. If ever I can't think of what to write a song about, I just open an app. I mean, I open it at random, or whatever page I'm looking at, I can write a song about. And I'm looking at a map of China, immediately I think of six songs. You can't go wrong doing that, you know.
Surprisingly, you tend to write and record the music before writing the lyrics. That's surprising, since the lyrics are so important to your work. And you often write multiple sets of lyrics. How do you make the final decision?
Well, sometimes I'm wrong. I mean, if a song has four verses, I'll pretty much usually write 12 and try and pick the best ones. I don't always pick the best ones, oddly enough. Years later, I can look back at all these lyrics and I think, why didn't I choose that? You know what I mean? It seems so obvious, but, you know, you have to make a decision at some point. And, yeah, I mean, Year of the Cat had at least four different sets of lyrics. Originally, it was called Foot of the Stage, and it was about an English comedian called Tony Hancock, who, oddly enough, committed suicide. And he played this very depressed character. And I was at a concert in my hometown of Bournemouth when I was a teenager, and I saw Tony Hancock. And everybody was laughing. He was saying, I'm so depressed. I'm so miserable. You know? And the audience were all laughing because that's the character that he played. And it just occurred to me immediately, it was blindingly obvious to me that he meant it. I mean, it was absolutely serious. And I think about 3 months later, he actually did commit suicide. So I wrote this song, and the chorus was, his tears fell down like rain at the foot of the stage, you know, foot of the stage being Year of the Cat. And the melody was the same, but the lyrics were completely different. And the American record company said, well, this is all well and good, but we've never heard of Tony Hancock in America. I mean, in England, he was the most famous comedian, but in America, no one had heard of him. And so they said, you know, you better rewrite it. Please write us a sensible set of lyrics. And I had a girlfriend at the time who had a book on Vietnamese astrology, and it was open at a chapter called The Year of the Cat. For some unknown reason, that set me off on a tangent, and I started writing about the Casablanca movie, about Humphrey Bogart, and it ended up as Year of the Cat. It wasn't Foot of the Stage. But yeah, I do have a habit of writing multiple sets of lyrics and multiple verses.
One morning comes and you're still with her, and the bus and the tourists are gone. You know, sometime you're bound to leave her, but for now you're gonna stay in the Year of the Cat.
Like many people, I did discover you through Year of the Cat, and then I worked my way backwards through your catalog. And you've had some great guest musicians on your records. Love Chronicles has Jimmy Page and Richard Thompson on it. Did you just call him up and say, come on over?
Yeah, well, I met Jimmy, oh God, when he was still probably in the Yardbirds a long time ago. He'd been in a band called Neil Christian and the Crusaders. And he was a session guy. You know, he played everybody's sessions. And on my first ever record, which was a single called The Elf, Jimmy played on the B-side because it was written by one of the Yardbirds anyway. So Jimmy Payton turned up and played guitar in it. And, you know, I got to know him slightly. And when I did Love Chronicles, I thought, well, you know, maybe he'll come and play on it. He did. By then he was in Zeppelin. And, oh, God, I remember he turned up with his manager, Peter Grant, who was this ex-professional wrestler. He was enormous. He had quite a reputation even back then, but of course I'm Joe Idiot, and I didn't know about that. I actually sent Peter Grant out to get me a cup of tea. And he did it, which is insane because you know, everybody was scared to death of him. Of course, I didn't know that. I thought he was a roadie. So it was a memorable session. And then Richard I'd known from Fairport Convention because I'd done some radio shows and live gigs with Fairport. They were a regular part of the British folk scene at the time.
Are you still in touch with Richard at all?
I see him very, very rarely now. The last time I saw him was at the airport in Los Angeles. I was standing behind this tall guy carrying a guitar, and it turned out it was Richard Thompson. I said, what are you doing here?
You ever consider touring the two of you together? That would be fantastic.
Yeah, I have actually. I mean, there aren't many. It's coming down to the sort of last man standing from the English folk scene. I mean, a lot of them are gone. Bert Jantz, John Renborn, Sandy Denny, Nick Drake. I mean, a lot of these people are not here anymore. We're coming down to the wire. I mean, I'm still at it, and Ralph McTell's still at it, and Richard is still at it. But, you know, the ranks are thinning here. So I'd like to do a tour with Richard and probably with Ralph, too, because I know them very well. But I don't know how that would work. When I tour, I tend to be surrounded by wine drinkers. I mean, they all come out of the woodwork brandishing bottles of wine. And Richard is a Muslim. I'm not really quite sure, you know, like if that would work. I like the idea, though.
I was a history major in college, so I was fascinated by your album Past, Present, and Future, which turns 50 next month. Is it time for a sequel? Because you got some great topics. You got William Jefferson Clinton, Road to Baghdad, post Y2K blues.
Yeah, I mean, I did that. You know, it's kind of been done. But I've written a lot more historical songs, obviously, over the years. You know, it isn't just Past, Present, and Future. Although I think that one encapsulated a certain time. It kind of screams 1973 to me. You know, it was a time when people were making quote-unquote concept albums, and Past, Present, and Future is one of them.
I asked Alan Parsons what his favorite non-Alan Parsons Project album was, and he told me, hands down, it's Year of the Cat. And he said,
yeah,
you were a bit hesitant about adding jazz elements. What convinced you?
Jazz elements. Oh, he's talking about the saxophone. Well, I was more than hesitant. I was completely opposed to the idea. I said, you know, brass instruments are jazz, you know, that they don't belong in folk rock. Folk rock is, you know, it's jangly guitars. I mean, everybody knows that. You know, the Birds, Bob Dylan, that kind of thing. But with a peculiar English sensitivity. And he wanted to put a saxophone on Year of the Cat. I said, you're crazy. there are no saxophones in folk rock. You know, that's not what it's all about. And he persevered and told me to sleep on it, and I slept on it. I still didn't like it. But he said, well, everyone else in the world is going to like it, so just learn to live with it. And I suppose over the years I have, you know. I still don't think saxophones belong in folk rock, actually, but I'm a minority of one in that opinion.
Does Al Stewart have a favorite Al Stewart album?
Oh, probably Past, Present, Future. I mean, that would be right up there. Just because I feel a great affinity for the historical songs. I mean, it goes straight into a life of Admiral Lord Fisher on the first track, and Fisher was a remarkable character. Got blamed for the Dardanelles campaign, but it wasn't his fault, it was Churchill. But I actually went back and I found the 1929 history of Fisher's life. I didn't want a contemporary one because they put a spin on what actually happened. I wanted a history book from, you know, very close to the time that Fisher was alive, because I wanted to know what the people who were alive then actually thought about Fisher rather than, you know, some retro historian. And it was a wonderful book because written in 1929, I think, it described Churchill as a young upstart, which I thought was amazing.
Your most recent studio album, 2008's Sparks of Ancient Light, is there any plans for a new album?
No. If people start buying them again, I'll start making them again. But basically, septuagenarian folk singers are not in vogue at the moment, and I can't imagine that they would come back into vogue anytime soon. So I don't want to make a record that nobody buys. I've never made a record that's lost money in my life, and I don't want to start now.
All you need is wine and an atlas, really.
That's all you need, wine and an atlas. Yes, I'm looking at a world atlas right now. In fact, I've got my hand on it.
Okay.
There's never one far away from me.
And your backup band is Empty Pockets. How did they become your band?
Oh, that's a very timely question. We were introduced, oddly enough, by Gary Wright, who sadly just passed away. I was doing a series of dates with Gary. And I can play solo. I mean, I was a folk singer for, God help us, about 10 years, you know, before I ever had bands. And so it's easy for me just to get an acoustic guitar and play. But Gary kind of needs a band, you know. So he'd found the Empty Pockets. They're from Chicago. And we did a co-headline somewhere, I think, in California. And I said, it'd be nice if they just learned one or two of my songs, you know. If they're there anyway, why not? And Gary had this habit of doing sound checks that lasted forever. You know, like he'd make the band play the entire set at sound check, which I think is kind of crazy, but that's what he did. And my sound checks are the shortest in the world. I mean, if they take longer than 2 minutes, it's shocking to me. I mean, I basically just strum, in fact, and hear it. and I can hear all the instruments, then that's it. You know, I'm done. I'm not going to do a long sound check. And I think the Pockets were so charmed by how fast my sound checks were that they said, well, we want to work with you. And so that's, we've been doing it for 8 years now, actually. We've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of gigs. So obviously we're doing something right.
How do you decide the set list?
Well, it's different every night. I mean, it's not all different. There are some songs that people, you know, want me to play, and I more or less have to play. But then there are lots of other things that we throw in that maybe a song I haven't done for 40 years, you know, like I'll just throw it into the set. And that's really fun. God, I haven't heard that for a long time. Let's try that. I'm trying to get them to play Rain Barrel at the moment.
Oh, nice.
I don't know whether they will or not. They're resistant to some of the songs, but they like other ones. Oddly enough, they do like Hannah the Navigators. I'm resistant about that one because it's got a really weird series of chords in the middle that I can never remember. When I was playing with Dave Nachmanoff, we dug up the news from Spain. I hadn't played that for probably at least 30 years at that point. It's a big piano solo. It's Rick Wakeman playing piano. And I thought it couldn't be done on guitar, and Nachmanoff proceeded to do it.
Wow.
So we recorded it on our live album from 2009, Uncorked. To my amazement, it became the most requested song on the record. So you never know. I mean, some of these songs, I write them, I never play them, I forget about them. And then we dig them up 30 or 40 years later, and all of a sudden everyone's requesting them. It's shocking to me because it means that I might have spent, you know, the last 40 years playing all the wrong songs.
Can I make a request for as many seafaring songs as possible?
Yes, well, the Pockets have been learning The Dark and the Rolling Sea,
and that's
one I probably should play. It's actually one of my favorite songs. And, well, we've got Old Admirals. What else have I written about the sea? Lord Grenville.
Oh, yay, yay.
Lest we forget. The Revenge, 1593, a big naval battle. Lord Grenville took on almost an entire Spanish navy and got sunk and killed for his troubles, but I got a song out of it.
Any chance we can hear Life and Life Only?
Oh, goodness. That's interesting. That's got a Richard Thompson solo on it. No, there's no chance.
Oh,
the Pockets don't know it, and I don't know it anymore.
Well, thank you, Al Stewart, for talking with us today. It was a joy and an honor to speak with you, especially about history, because, you know, there's not a lot of us history nerds out here.
No, there are actually more than you'd think. You know, when I started doing whatever it is I'm doing, I was fairly obsessed with history and literature. And it turns out that there are people in the world who, you know, those are their favorite subjects. And when you say there aren't that many of them, okay, so maybe it's like 0.5% of the population or whatever, but they add up. I mean, they're everywhere. We keep selling shows out. So I think there are at least 500 people in every city, you know, like no matter where you go, who like history and literature. And because no one else can be bothered to do it, they all come to my shows, which is fine by me.
Al Stewart will be appearing with his band Empty Pockets this Saturday, April 20th at the Cuesta CPAC. He spoke with KCBX's Sal Espana in this interview from our archives. This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. I'm Carol Tangeman. Up next, peace, love, and pets.
I'm Robin with Woods Humane Society. For today's show, I wanted to share some wonderful opportunities to help people and animals in our community. One of those awesome organizations is with us today, Pacific Wildlife Care, which was founded in 1984. They have evolved into a thriving nonprofit organization with a rehabilitation center, full-time wildlife veterinarian, and a dedicated team of staff and volunteers. Kristen Howland joins us to share a little more. She is the executive director of Pacific Wildlife Care. She brings over two decades of experience in nonprofit leadership. Welcome to Peace, Love, and Pets, Kristen.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Robin.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And, you know, a lot of times we're talking about cats and dogs and horses and things, but I'm excited to talk about some wildlife because living in this area, we definitely run into interesting critters. And we definitely have all placed that desperate call of finding that injured bird or that wildlife that we just do not know what to do with. So I think our listeners are going to learn a lot from you today, and we'll hear some exciting opportunities of how people may be able to get involved. Let's start by a little overview. Tell us about the organization and what's going on these days.
Well, yeah, I'm so excited to be here today and tell you about PWC. So, you know, one of the most exciting things is that we are the only rehabilitation center for wildlife in San Luis Obispo County. So, and actually the only other closer ones are in Santa Barbara and Monterey. And then a lot of the ones in the valley have gone now. So, you know, we get wildlife from all over the place. And our vet is incredible and takes on also additional species that many of the other centers can't take on. We have over 22,000 hours of volunteer dedicated in all kinds of different areas. And I think we're at about 263 volunteers this year. So we're building and we still need more. So it's exciting to talk about this opportunity with you. You know, in 2023, we had almost 3,000 patients come through our center, which is a lot, and it varies depending on the season. So we can talk a little about that.
Yes.
But pretty amazing. Lots of really cute little creatures coming in. Sadly, they have to come into our center, but I'm happy to be able to get them rehabilitated and released again.
So you guys are providing essential care for injured animals. Is that the main focus, is providing care and getting them back into their natural habitat, or do they become sanctuary animals at times?
Now, our goal is to, as much as possible, to get them rehabilitated and released with as little human contact as possible. So keeping their natural fear of humans, keeping them wild, and getting them back out where they belong. That's our ultimate goal. And we have a wonderful, robust education program that also helps with that. So trying to kind of stave off them coming into the center in the first place.
Yep. So you mentioned mammals and you mentioned birds. Tell us, give us a little rundown of what kind of the common wildlife you see, maybe the most common call that you get, and the common offenders around here that show up in need.
That's a great question. So of course, I'm still learning a lot about this. I was really surprised to learn that so many of our seabirds really get hit and have a lot of difficulty during big storms. Mm. They come in emaciated, difficult for them to find food, blown into areas where they shouldn't have been.
And we've had a lot of interesting weather recently, so that probably increases some of that need.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of seabirds in stormy weather, then of course the baby season, you know, a real common offender. You never thought that you would see such a cute possum. Mm. But possums are adorable.
Wow.
Especially baby ones.
Possums, are they like trending or something? I feel like they're everywhere now. They're
right?
Like on social media. People have accounts following them. Like it's a whole thing.
We have one of our animal ambassadors who's a sweet little possum. Mm. So, yeah, those are out there. Of course, we have raccoons. I think another fascinating thing that a lot of our volunteers do is home care. So we have people who take these animals into their home and have cages set up in their backyards to rehabilitate and release animals. So there's some that take bunnies, raccoons, possums, songbirds. We have a couple of raptors as well. So pretty neat.
Okay, so that leads us right into giving us an idea of what volunteers do to support your organization. And if you have needs right now that are, I guess, a little bit more pressing than others, this is your time to share.
So Wildlife Hotline, that is definitely one of the biggest ones that we need. And it's really neat because they've had it made it available to be able to do hotline at home. So you don't even have to come into the center. However, you do have the option to be at the center and answer the phone. But we definitely have a need for more hotline volunteers. So those are the folks that are taking your phone calls as you have an emergency. And they also are dispatching out our rescue transport volunteers, our RTVs. And we are actually one of the only wildlife rehabilitation and rescue centers that have people who go out and actually get the animals and bring them back. A lot of the other places don't have the volunteer staff to do that or staff to do that. So they make everybody bring the animals in if they can catch them. So we've got some wonderfully trained volunteers out there. Then we've got front desk. So those are the folks that accept these animals as either the RTVs or people who are able to bring the animals into the center arrive. And then we have rehabilitation center volunteers. So they work in the clinic with the rehab technicians and the vet. And then we have the baby bird room, which is seasonal.
Wow.
And that's a busy place, you know.
Bet.
Every 15 minutes, got to shovel some food into those little baby bird's mouths. We have facility maintenance on the outside. And we have outside cleaning, event planning and fundraising, and of course, outreach and education. I think our biggest need is really that wildlife hotline and rescue transport. And for rescue transport, we're missing people in North County. We really need some help in North County.
And talk about those locations. So where are you based out of, where volunteers would be able to come and physically help? And what kind of time commitment do you usually look for from volunteers?
So the center currently is out in Morro Bay, right next to the Three Stacks, and it's out there with the Marine Mammal Center. So 1 4-hour shift per week for the clinic front desk or baby bird room, and then 1 8-hour shift per month for rescue transport. Most hotline volunteers commit to 4-hour shifts every other week, but some have weekly shifts as well.
I'm always so relieved when someone picks up the phone. It's so nice when they pick up the phone or they call you back and they're ready to assist you and that little critter you found. So if they are interested, if somebody's listening right now, what is the process? What do they do to get involved? How do they reach you? And do you do like orientations or those types of things?
Absolutely. Well, first thing you should do is jump right onto our website at pacificwildlifecare.org. And if you go to how to help us, you can go to volunteer and read all about volunteer opportunities as well as the application. So you'll want to go there. You can always, reach out to myself at Kristen@pacificwildlifecare.org, and I'm happy to help answer questions or direct you to someone who can.
So she's going to share that hotline number with us. Jot it down, put it on that fridge or put it in your phone. Let's share that hotline number.
805-543-WILD or 805-543-9453.
Awesome. Love that. Love that phone number. So are you having so much fun in your new position, new organization? It must be pretty awesome to be able to help all that wildlife.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a learning process, which I love learning. It's amazing. I love hearing about the different animals. I like hearing the success stories. It's truly, I think the most incredible part about it is the passion that comes with it, the staff and the volunteers. A tremendous amount of passion and care for this organization and the wildlife.
Same for us. We love the animals. We're passionate about the animals. That's why we work in the fields that we do. But it does come back to the people. As much as we all are there to help the animals, we couldn't do what we do without the people. We would just not be able to do very much. Our impact would be so small. But this community is such an amazing community to be a part of for any organization, any nonprofit, but just a special community for animal lovers of any kind, wild or our companion animals. What has been the most interesting animal experience that you've had in your 4 months there? Do you have a story to share or a wildlife critter that came your way?
Oh my goodness, gosh. I mean, there's so many amazing animals that come through the center. I think the most interesting thing is knowing the skills that the rehab technicians and the veterinarians have to heal these animals and get them back on track. It's truly phenomenal.
That's
I am
awesome.
So impressed.
Yeah. And is there a common fishing line or birds with hurt wings? Is that
right?
I feel like it's like I found a bird and I think its wing is broken. Is that one of the most common calls?
Well, you know, it really varies.
Okay.
And a lot of it depends on the season. But the top five reasons in 2023 for admission, 21% was orphaned animals. So that may have been, you know, mom left or something scared them away or mom got hurt. The other one is displaced from a nest. Cat interaction. So thank you to Woods for making sure that animals are kept inside. And physical trauma. was another one. And then, of course, vehicle collision. So, and again, you know, it really depends on the season, but those were overall the top reasons they found their way to the center.
Awesome. And do you guys do any fun events during the year that we can get involved with and be a part of?
You know, we are always trying to get ourselves out there so people know who we are and know who to call when they have a wildlife emergency. But one of our biggest events is our Wild at Heart Gala on August 24th this year. We're excited to welcome the public and enjoy and celebrate. We're going to be celebrating our 40th year and hopefully talking a little bit about the things that are coming up for PWC that we're very excited about sharing.
Awesome. So that's in August, and I'm assuming tickets are not on sale yet, but probably check back on the website pretty soon.
Yes, okay. Absolutely. That will be coming up soon. More information will get out as soon as we can, and I'll definitely let you know.
Yeah, let me know. You know I love going to events,
yeah.
So I want to be there. I want to be there.
So some of the needs that we have at the center are things like, you know, blankets and towels, bleach for sanitization of all of those things. So if you have items that you'd like to donate, please reach out. You can go ahead and give the hotline a call, and they can direct you to the right place. Again, that hotline number is 805-543-9453 or 805-543-WILD.
If you're just joining us, you are listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX. I'm Robin with Woods Humane Society, and my guest on Peace, Love, and Pets is Kristen Howland, Executive Director of Pacific Wildlife Care. She just shared ways that you may be able to help wildlife in our area, and you all have heard me talk already several times on Peace, Love, and Pets for helping cats, dogs, puppies, kittens, and overall shelter support. In addition to Woods in SLO and Atascadero, don't forget your county shelters in SLO and Santa Barbara counties are always in need of fosters and volunteers. They are over capacity and desperately looking for volunteers and fosters to support staff and the animals. I want to spend the rest of our time sharing some other fun opportunities that people may not know about. So we're going to list off a few other organizations that are helping animals. You may just hear something that moves you to take action. Our friends at New Life Canine, which teaches service dogs and places them with veterans and first responders with PTSD. Their dogs are provided at no cost to recipients, and their goals are to prevent suicides, enrich relationships, reduce homelessness, save community resources, and decrease the need for medications. Volunteers are a huge part of their program at New Life Canines. They have a team of around 15 to 20 volunteer puppy raisers that help socialize and train their dogs as they work their way on becoming a service dog. Some puppy raisers take the youngest puppies home every night for the first 2 months of training. Others take the older puppies home on the weekends only. Those puppies are trained Monday through Friday at the California Men's Colony by skilled inmate trainers. And all you need to do is provide home and care on the weekends. That sounds like a great opportunity for somebody. To learn more, visit their website and look for the How to Help button at New Life Canine. And Kristen, you got another awesome organization,
yes,
that we both have worked with in the community before.
Absolutely. So our friends at the Feline Network, they need some help. Trapping is a very rewarding and volunteering experience. Trap, neuter, and return works. Trapping for spay, neuter not only helps prevent unwanted litters, but it truly improves the cat's life 100%. Feline Network trapper Elaine says, I have been trapping cats for Feline Network for over 30 years. It's exciting, fun to do, rewarding, and you meet a lot of great people with our community. They're always looking for foster homes and food donations. Call Lynette for more information at 805-556-0717. Again, 805-556-0717. And you can also reach them at their website at felinenetwork.org.
And our friend Jeff over at the Turtle and Tortoise Rescue of Arroyo Grande, which I love visiting him, has lots of volunteer opportunities and animals of all kinds, from goats to sheep to worms, bees, mandarin ducks, emus, all kinds of turtles and tortoises. They offer tours by appointment as well as volunteer opportunities. And he has opportunities for high school and college age experience, lots of special projects. And if they have a special interest or skill set, you may have a skill set that they just might need. So adults and youth can get involved over at the Turtle and Tortoise Rescue. Email is best. You can find that on their website, Turtle and Tortoise Rescue of ArroyoGrande.org.
And from the Heart Animal Sanctuary in Paso, they specialize in needs, special needs animals. They often care for horses, goats, donkeys, alpaca, sheep, huskies, and more. They could use volunteers to help with an event in September, and they're always looking for equine experience, volunteers, and people that can help with the tours that they have. The phone number, get your pens, 805-610-2149. Again, 805-610-2149.
And a wonderful little place you may not know about, we have a donkey sanctuary right in our area. Rancho Burro Donkey Sanctuary rescues and rehabilitates abused, abandoned, and neglected donkeys with special needs. They are a 501c3 nonprofit. They provide a lifetime sanctuary where donkeys receive expert care and love. Founders Jim and Carlin Eckford, with 18 years of experience, are expanding to an even larger sanctuary this summer because their needs have grown. Unfortunately, so many donkeys in need, so they're going to move into a bigger and better space, and they would love your support, and they would love some new volunteers. Donations help provide essential care, and volunteers make a huge difference in their daily operations. You can visit their website to donate, to book a tour. They do educational tours, and you can learn more about their volunteer program and how you may be able to help those sweet special needs donkeys. You can check out their website. It's www.ranchoburrodonkeyssanctuary.org. And I'm sure you could do a quick Google and you will find them. But I've worked with them before. Great people in our community, and pretty cool that we have so many choices for all types of different animals and wildlife in our community. Those are just a handful of the amazing places that you just might be able to support by helping and volunteering your time. I want to thank my guest, Kristen, for joining me with Pacific Wildlife Care. Thank you and your team and volunteers for all that you do to help animals in our community. And as we wrap up, I'm going to send a big thank you to all the volunteers out there generously and compassionately sharing your support and your time in this community. Special thanks to those that choose to spread peace and love to animals in need. We love our volunteers. As for what's going on at Woods, we have some fun ways to support. Spring and summer are such a busy time at the shelter and in our community. Woods is very excited to be kicking off Wine for Paws weekend, April 19th, 20th, and 21st. Over 80 wineries, local businesses participating this year, all while helping cats and dogs at Woods and supporting some great businesses in our community. Woods is very excited to be the charity partner for a new event at the beautiful Hotel Slow on April 21st. It is the Rosé the Slow Way. Tickets are on sale now, and I just had a meeting with them and the chef. I left just ready for this event. The food is going to be delicious. We are talking caviar, oyster. We're talking fancy, fancy food from chefs, lots of rosé, fabulous wineries, fashion, music, sweet treats. And of course, Woods will be there with a cuddle corner with foster puppies and kittens. It's going to be an amazing pink party, all to benefit cats and dogs at Woods. So check out that event coming up. We are also partnering with Limos Pet Supply to stock up our community pet pantry that is sharing over 1,000 pounds of pet food every single month with people who love their pets. They just need an extra bag of food or two so they can keep their pets in their home. And we are going to be at every single Limos location on April 27th from 11 to 2. And Sylvester's is going to give you a free burger card if you donate to Woods. So you can find out about all the fun stuff going on at Woods on our website, woodshumanesociety.org. Follow us on social media. Thank you, Kristen, so much for coming
and joining me.
Thank you for listening to Peace, Love, and Pets on KCBX. I'm Robin with Woods. Don't forget, your new best friend is waiting for you at the shelter.
You've been listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. Gary Eyster composed our theme music. A special thanks to all our guests and contributors this week. I'm Carol Tangeman. Join us each Monday from 1 to 2 in the afternoon for more local stories. You can head to our website to learn more about what you heard today or to listen to past segments. KCBX.org.